Micah, so you went to a sweet convention this past weekend. What kind of swag did you get?
Yeah, so this was a convention for the Northeastern Mid-Market Pencil Supply Convention. And ooh, yeah, so they've got lots of cool pencils. I have this.
You're making a joke, but there's like serious pencil community out there.
Oh dear, I hope I don't say something wrong then.
This could be real.
It's a pencil bank. So, uh-huh, you know, like they used to have like piggy banks. Well, this one is just like a giant, what is it? Stadletter uh-huh pencil. And uh-huh, so I can drop my coins into it. I've also got this t-shirt for the Blackwing pencil. Which I'm very excited about. And last but not least, I have this coffee mug that says, I'm number two. Isn't that funny? Number two.
Actually, I really want a lot of those things. That's really good.
It's pretty good swag, right?
That is good swag. This week, we join Michael going to the
annual Northeastern Mid-Market Office Supply Convention. And Jim Halpert is going to be coming, which will be fun. Poor little guy has been stuck working under Josh, the poor man's Michael Scott, as he is known around my condo.
So not too far off from Micah's pencil convention. Then maybe they were next door to each other.
They may have been, or they were at the same spot, but just
different ballrooms.
And everybody who makes pencils for the office supply convention just got to stick around.
Mm-hmm. That's good. That's good cross marketing right there.
Yeah, good work. You saved some money there, folks.
I like this episode. I always like episodes when they are out of the office a little bit, and we get to see the flip flop between like who stayed behind and who left. To go on a little adventure,
running around, having a good time, seeing people. No, but it's fun because when you think about like the, you know, going back to us talking about how the camera is involved in this, it's mm-hmm it's a pretty big deal to like have camera crews leaving the office for, you know, unreliable lighting and them moving around a lot and trying to figure out how to shoot these scenes. It's fascinating from that aspect. And then to think about, and it doesn't come up too much, but just like to think about how folks at a convention would react to see like a camera crew following some people around. It's like, should I know these people? Are these people important?
I know. I kind of wish that the show actually had a little bit more of that interaction with the extras, like a little more awkwardness.
Yes.
I think right now, like the extras in these episodes where they're kind of off somewhere, they play it way too cool.
Mm-hmm.
I would like to see them be a little bit like catching someone being like, who's that? Or what is that? Or, you know, like a little bit more awkwardness going on in the background.
Yeah, because that's how I think that would be the reasonable way for folks to work, that you'd at least mm-hmm see some people going, what's going on over there? You know, they're not going to completely be looking away the whole time unless the idea is that somehow like the producers have already talked to everybody or like the convention sent out an email. It's like, hey, there's going to be a camera crew there.
Yeah, that's true. That it would be standard operating procedure. I've seen that kind of stuff done before, right? Like,
yeah,
you know, play it cool or we're going to kick you out. And then they pick the good scenes to add into the final cut of a show or something like that.
And they have
no one's acting goofy.
Right, exactly. And they have to like, that's their way of providing consent. I don't know. I know we're like getting super meta, I guess, but
yeah, we are.
I don't know.
But it makes sense because if you're working within the confines of the idea that this is a mockumentary, like you do ask these questions.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like that helps with the continuity of the show. And I feel like by us having a show where we talk about The Office, it kind of, we're explaining almost to ourselves in this conversation.
I think so. Yeah, it's like, okay, these are questions I have, and I'm curious what Tiff thinks about them. I'm curious what Micah thinks about them.
So I really like this answer we've come up with, because that is how it would go in a real documentary. You don't see people that goofy in the background. So yeah, okay, I forgive them. I take back what I said. We're learning.
Good. Slowly but surely, we are learning. So this episode starts with an interesting cold open. I guess not that interesting. It's it's very predictable of Michael, but it's funny. It's kind of funny. We've got Michael thinking that he wants to adopt a child.
And Pam, of course, reacting just like Pam Wood to someone who has terrible ideas and knows Michael really, really well. She's basically like, are you sure you're going to want this tomorrow? Let's think about it before we jump right in.
It's going to take this long and it's going to cost this much money. And Michael's like, I don't even know if I'm going to want a child then. And Pam is like, good for her that she doesn't just like throw out her arms and just go, that's what I'm saying. But like that she takes a moment and she's like, yeah, exactly, bud. That's yeah. Because it is so, it's so very Michael. And honestly, the thing that rings true for me, I don't think she said it yet, but at some point she talks about how with Michael, you have to catch things early and like stop him from thinking about them, because if you don't, then he's going to spin out of control and it's like a runaway train.
Yep.
That is like a real life bit of advice that I've used before with people, where like the things that I know that they might worry about whenever it's coming on, it's like, oh no, I know that if I don't just address this right now, then they're going to be thinking about this all day and it's not going to be great. And so it's really funny. I just think of Pam and that I channel my inner Pam in that moment.
She does it really well with Michael too, in this tiny cold open where she uses his finances as a catalyst to stop his thinking, right?
Yes.
She was like, it's really expensive and it takes a long time. And she knows that those are the two things that he is not keen on. He wants it to be cheap and he wants it to be quick, right?
Yes. I want
and
maybe
if it
right
were
now,
actually like that, he would probably make a lot more terrible decisions.
Oh my word. He would
everything
definitely
were cheap and quick.
He would have like five kids and wouldn't be able to take care of any of them.
Oh, it's so funny. So after that little cold open where Pam agrees after 30 years, because she also knows that she can't just say no, you know, she has to give Michael something to get him to keep walking away. So she's like, fine, in 30 years, we'll have a kid together. And by then, she probably would be very much out of childbearing years, so it wouldn't even matter.
Yes, she'd be okay. And he probably wouldn't even know any different.
Nope. I like the scene that we get after this with Dwight and Angela, and we get to hear, is this the first time we're hearing their little nickname, the monkey nickname?
I believe so. If it's come up before, it's been like sort of it's not addressed so openly, but I think that this is the first time. Yeah.
Yeah. Cause now they're really like, they are still keeping their secret conversation where they're not actually looking at each other and they're just whispering, but now we're getting pet names. So it's kind of indicating that their relationship is getting deeper and it's getting more involved and they are much closer than they ever have been before.
I really do like it. And it's interesting because Angela is kind of worried about them going away.
Yeah, she's getting a little jealous.
Yeah, there we go. She's jealous. She just wants, you know, Dwight to be a good guy while he's away.
And she doesn't want to lose time with him too. She was like, I thought we were going to hang out and now you're leaving. And so I think she's facing that reality of liking having him around outside of office hours more often. And we get a really good little confessional with Angela. And I think it's very funny, but then her improv. Okay. So according to Angela Kinsley, she improvised the whole fly thing.
No way.
There actually were there was a fly in the room before and the writers liked it so much that they added it to the script.
Oh,
she
yeah.
She did it on like an outtake and they kept it in because it was just so natural.
Why are there flies in here?
Yeah. I just thought that was that stood out to me as one of those nice real moments that would happen in a reality confessional. And so it was very good. So that was all her improv situation there.
There was like a movie, I don't remember what movie it was, but there's a movie where someone has a fly like crawl on their face and the actor does not doesn't say anything about it. And it's like very clearly on their face. You can very clearly see it, but nobody addresses it.
Yeah, it's unnatural to not do anything about it.
Yeah, you would, as a human being, you would swat away at the fly or you would comment on it or something.
Another nice little background thing that we got to see was Michael's jeans in a dry cleaning bag.
His fun jeans. Who dry cleans jeans? Michael Scott does.
Did we see that yet? Has that come up? The dry clean jeans? I think once Michael dropped off dry cleaning and Pam threw it under her desk. But yes. Were those jeans?
Those were his other, what were those called? I think that like those are just the jeans that he really liked because I don't
but
think
they were
was,
jeans. Like yeah, just yeah, yeah, their sure. jeans that he drew. And I think later on we actually get a moment of them talking about Michael dry cleaning jeans, like they call it out. And so I think it's kind of funny that the previous episode, not the direct previous, but a previous episode, we see dry clean jeans come into the office, and now we're seeing another pair of dry cleaned jeans hanging on the door. So this has been like a build up thing of Michael's character that he dry cleans his jeans.
and it's they're white, like this, they're terrible. They're white, they're terrible. They're so bad. I don't understand. Ugh.
Speaking of terrible clothing, well, not terrible, I guess, but Pam has a date tonight and she is not dressing up for it, to Kelly's horror. And Kelly set up this date, right? So this is another whole little plot point that's going on.
Can I trust Kelly to set up? I don't think I can trust Kelly to set up a good, I guess at this point, we don't know Kelly that well. But knowing Kelly, I would not want her idea of what my person would be on a double date. You know what I mean? Like, I can't trust her to make a reasonable choice.
Don't feel that she has good taste in partners.
There you go. There. Perfect. That's, yes, what Tiff said.
Yeah. I love it. Now, like, we're getting that side of Kelly, and we get that adds a third location to this episode where we see them actually out on a date in a restaurant. So that's kind of fun. We're getting all over the place here in season three. We're already moving around. It's episode two and we already have like multiple locations.
Yeah.
And it's pretty fun.
This is sweet because there is like some connection that Kelly has thought about. It's not just like, oh, I'm just going to pick this person because they are the same astrological sign and they have curly hair too or something. Like I see Kelly
right,
being
at least she picked a cartoonist. Like that was
exactly
thoughtful.
A cartoonist from the local newspaper who happens to be Kelly's neighbor. That was thoughtful. And like I said, I see Kelly more making different kind of connections based on what we know about her and like her, how she enjoys reality TV and things like that, where it would seem that there are more, esoteric, choices to link two people together. So this was a sweet move, I think. And, you know, she's thinking of Pam. Oh, well, he's a cartoonist. Pam likes to draw. This might go well.
Yeah. And I think that aspect of the date, it has Pam a little bit excited about it, when that she's like, oh, I guess we would have something in common, where we know that she's still hung up on Jim, because throughout this entire episode, we get all of those little splashes of them kind of, they're like missed connection together. And so we see like any mention of Jim's name, Pam just gets a little awkward.
Yeah.
Just like on the way out, Michael is like, oh, you have any messages for Jim? And she's like, and then, you know, comedy ensues. But it's like she heard his name and she froze, you know, and that's like a big thing. Even though she's preparing for this date, just hearing Jim's name catches her off guard when Michael receives a phone call from Pam and Jim's kind of there and he says, everyone say hi. And we see Jim's reaction is awkward. We see Pam's reaction to that is awkward. They're both still so raw from what happened. And then Jim all of a sudden leaving, and it's this sad misconnection that is going on, because it's almost, we kind of find out at the end that Jim left for Pam. He tells Michael. We all knew it, but he tells Michael to help Michael's ego, because Michael was worried it was because of him, as he does, you know, puts things
on
himself.
You're not a bad boss. You're a great boss.
I mean, yeah. Actually, I kind of would like Michael as a boss. Oh, but not with all the sexism. No, never mind.
See, I have that thought all the time.
When, I like him as a comedy boss.
Yeah. He's but, like, I need a real boss, but could you just like come around sometimes and throw in some antics? I have a back and forth with him because like even all the way later on when we are talking about his merits as a boss and, mm-hmm. you know, people are sad that the about reasons and things and it makes me wish that he, I don't know, I guess I still am like, yeah, but he still does all these terrible things.
Yeah. Yeah. You want like later season Michael Scott as your boss, not the yes. first few seasons.
Yes.
But yeah, so we hear all of this stuff about, and it, Jim's like, she shot me down twice. You know, that's what he says for the reason why he isn't like reconnecting, even though he knows Pam is single now
mm-hmm.
and he knows that she's dating and, you know, Pam knows that Jim is single, but he left. And it's like both of them feel stuck in this chasm of indecision. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's like Jim doesn't want to put himself out there again to be only
hurt.
Shot down again.
Yeah.
So he's almost like it's her move if she would want me, because now she's the one that's single. And for some reason, probably her shyness is all I can really guess at this moment, that she's not reaching out to Jim to be like, she canceled her wedding for him, essentially, you know, like she found out she wasn't with Roy because of what happened with Jim. And you can tell that she still has feelings for him. So why isn't she calling him up?
It's frustrating. And it's nice seeing Jim, and it's nice having this sort of, I don't know, this look into how Jim is doing in his world and how Pam is doing in hers. But yeah, you're right. You do wonder sort of, you keep having these misconnections. You keep having these things go, like now it is finally in a place where things could possibly be real, but also like, it's not easy leaving a job and, mm-hmm. you know, reestablishing yourself. And I also feel that there is a bit of pride there after being shot down twice. Like there's going to be some pride about, I shot my shot twice and you shut me down and now you're available and like you want me to come back to Scranton and try again to shoot my shot. That's a lot.
I understand why Jim isn't moving forward with it. I just don't understand why Pam isn't reaching out to Jim at this point. Like
yeah.
she knows how he feels. You know, maybe she is just trying to be single for a little while instead of jumping into a relationship. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like maybe she is just trying to give some, I guess if I think about it that way, she's trying to give some time for the reason she essentially broke up her wedding. It, like to jump right into another man's arms would be kind of bad.
Yeah.
And, you know what I mean? Like maybe she just needs like a second to breathe and figure out what is going on, what she wants in her life, as opposed to just going into another relationship. Yeah, I'll leave it at that. That's
yeah,
what I'm deciding.
That's
I've talked
I like
myself
that.
Into that idea. So we'll stick with that for now.
That works for me too. put a pin in it.
Yeah. So I want to get over to the convention after Michael has established his per diem and he's over at the convention.
Oh God. He's with Josh from Stamford and you know, it's Jim and Josh and Michael and Dwight and
Michael's greeting to Jim is just so Michael.
There he is. There's a traitor. 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 Come here, you. Come here. Ah! The prodigal, my son returns.
And of course, the meeting is super awkward. I mean,
yeah, they're trying to chat with each other and sort of figure it out. And it's awkward. You can see the distance, I guess, between them and also just sort of the difference in social dynamics between the two mm-hmm. groups is fascinating.
Yeah, because we have Dwight with Michael and then we have Jim with Josh. And you could tell, like, you know, these cool, tall dude bros, you know, like together. And then there's like kind of the nerds from Scranton together. And it's like there's a little competition going on for, I don't know, friendship or whatever's happening. There's just a lot of tension. And I really like how Jim, in a confessional, decides, well, he talks about how his feelings towards seeing Dwight again.
You know, when I saw Dwight, I realized how stupid and petty all those pranks I pulled on him were. And then he spoke. I wonder how hard it would be to get a copy of his room key.
And of course, Jim doesn't waste 2 seconds in deciding that he wants to start pranking Dwight.
You can't let Dwight go for too long, or else he's just going to just turn into a monster. He needs to be sort of reined in a little bit.
Oh, yeah. So that gives us something to look forward to throughout the episode of, like, what's Jim going to do?
How will he prank Dwight this time? If, you know, the antics are finally back. We've got Wile E. Coyote and the Roadrunner back at it again.
And we have Michael planning a party throughout the entire convention, which this feels so, man, this is just, it's desperate and hard to watch.
Yeah, as the kids Michael's say, party. Michael is thirsty. Michael mm-hmm. is thirsty, and that thirst is not cute, folks. And yeah, he's trying very hard to plan this party and get everybody involved and get people excited and pumped. And to him, it feels like it's a given. Like he's sort of taking the situation for granted, expecting that people are just going to come to the party. And I don't know if that's like it's worked in the past or something and, you know, people have just changed or what's the deal, but people are not into it and, you know, are not going to be coming to this party. And you can very clearly tell that's the case. And it goes on, you know, everybody else is working and in meetings and doing all this stuff. And there's no way that there's time to like plan and have a party when you have so many meetings, because that's what this convention is for.
I feel like Michael in this party, it's a whole, he wants to be this guy. He wants to be the guy that just people show up in his room and have a good time. And he has the alcohol and he has the cool lights. And like he's the MC, you know, he wants to be that MC, but we can kind of tell by this little moment after when Dwight's like, oh, I'll have a shot with you. And he was like, gross, Dwight. It's not even noon, right? And by him saying that to Dwight, it's showing that he isn't this party guy. You know, he's not in his heart this wild and crazy guy. He's just like an average, like almost middle-aged man from Scranton who has a regular management job. And he really wants to be something more, but naturally he's not. So I think that that's why people just aren't drawn to him in a party way.
Yeah, because that's not who he is.
And yeah, you know that. Those people who are party people that just, they make parties. Like,
Todd
and
Packer.
You just want to go to them. That's different.
Yeah, I guess I don't want to go. Yeah, I don't want to go to his parties. But I
but
feel
there's
like
cool people who are like, they, I don't know, they just rally everyone. They have this personality that just people want to hang out around and have parties around.
What's his name? He's like the hot guy from a different paper company that Michael tries to get to join the paper company later on.
Oh, the salesman.
Yeah, the salesman. Yeah.
The hot salesman that Pam
had a date with and then they didn't end up. That's the type of person where it's like they are a party person and like you want to go to their thing, whatever thing they're doing, you want to go to it.
Yeah. So Michael wants to be the Danny Cordray of the parties and he isn't. And so no one flocks to someone who's trying so hard.
He has charisma, but his charisma is not like, it's not cool charisma. It's just, it's a different kind of charisma. I don't know how else to put it. It's a different kind of charisma, and it is not the charisma that brings people into your porties.
Yeah, especially like a hotel room party. Like it has to be kind of awesome and already established. Like, I don't know. It has to be so much more for anyone to just like walk into a hotel room.
That's kind of creepy. Like, that's kind of weird. Yeah.
A small hotel room too. It's not even like a big one.
Just like, here, let's sit on my bed and drink booze. No, I don't think I'm going to do that. Thanks.
No. We also see Michael on the conference room floor, very expectedly loving the swag.
Swag. Stuff we all get. That's another one of my things that I love to say. And I said that one time when I used to work in an office, I said that and someone was like, oh, that's so clever that you come up with an acronym for swag. And I just looked at them and sort of gave them this blank stare, like, you don't know what I'm talking about. And then I explained it and they're like, I don't watch that show. Ugh. It was a nightmare, Tiff. It was an absolute nightmare.
I'm so sorry that happened to you.
Oh, dear.
But yeah, I love Michael and his swag because he is the exact type of person that would go around to every single table and sign up for stuff and just to get like the little stress ball and just eat all that stuff up. And it just ends up being like garbage generally in your house. And you're like, I don't want this stuff. Like, I don't need this stuff. But oh no, Michael loves this stuff and he's covered in it by the end of the conference.
Well, and we see that later too. He would sign up for a cell phone plan to get a stress ball, for goodness sake.
Through all of Michael's ridiculousness at the conference, mm-hmm. we get to see him being good at his job again, which is definitely always a little nicety for me. And it makes me smile about Michael and it makes you love him again.
Because yes.
He was getting essentially berated by Jan for not being in meetings all day, like her and Josh and Jim, like we're all in meetings, Michael, like treating him like a child. And he ends up having a pretty substantial meeting.
Sorry, my meeting ran late.
Really?
Yes, Jan, really, with a rep from Hammer Mill.
They're exclusive with Staples.
Used to be. Evan will call you in the morning to work out the details. We can now sell Hammer Mill products.
Yes!
Well, Michael, I underestimated you.
Yeah, well, maybe next time you will estimate me.
So yeah, that is one of my favorite little Michaelisms.
It's too fun. It's perfect. It's a perfect Michael thing to say, because the way that he, like, his relationship with words is just bizarre and unlike anyone else's that I know. And I appreciate Michael for getting that giant deal that no one else got.
Right?
Yeah, no one else was able to get that. He was like so happy to smugly announce that he had done it. He's like, I can have my party and eat cake too. And by golly, I did it.
He did do that nice and smugly. I was actually proud of him.
Yeah.
He like slipped that right in there super smooth. And it was really, really good.
We should probably talk about how, as we said, Jim was going to be looking at ways to prank Dwight, right? Because mm-hmm. He's there. He's doing his thing, being who he's being. And Jim is like, oh boy, gotta prank him. Gotta do it. And so, you know, Jim's looking for possibilities for doing so. And he somehow gets, which I'm still a little bit like, what? But he got Dwight's room key.
Which is what he said he was going to do. He was wondering, he was like, how could I get Dwight's room key? And he pulled it off.
He totally pulls it off. He gets Dwight's room key. He's going to go inside Dwight's room. And he mistakes a certain tiny cat-loving...
Jane Doe.
Jane Doe, yes. A tiny cat-loving Jane Doe who's good with numbers as a prostitute that Dwight has hired. He's not hired a prostitute, though, has he, Tiff?
No, no. He is, he's having a lady friend visitor, and Jim is just freaking out. Like, he couldn't believe, because that was the last thing seeing a woman inside of Dwight's room, or at least hearing a woman's voice, we're not sure what Jim actually saw. He immediately turned around, he was just absolute shock. And again, we see the little bit of Pam missing, because he was like, I gotta call someone.
Heartbreaking.
He doesn't get sad about it at that moment, but it's still, I know the audience got sad, but he was like, I gotta tell somebody. And we see him telling nobody, because Pam was the somebody he was going to tell when in that situation, because like, who else would really care? Who else knows the depth of Jim's prank?
He would have to tell the whole thing from the beginning of time. Like, yeah, no one's going to sit through that.
Oh, but that was that was a, I like that essentially Jim kind of got pranked a little bit, like, where he just shocked himself. He was like, oh, too far, too far.
Back it out, back it out. reverse prank. That's good.
Let's see.
We got to talk. We could talk about the double date.
Oh, yeah. After Pam gets tons of dating advice from all over the office, if we want to jump back there.
Including Phyllis.
Oh, Phyllis and Stanley.
Yes. You're going to have to put out.
Oh, my goodness. So, the most awkward double date ever, especially with Kelly and Ryan. Oh, we see a depth of their relationship that I am not comfortable with.
Amen.
And it was not a love match, was it, Micah?
No, no. It was a very dull, very full of himself man who at the end is like, I'll let you pick my brain. I wanted to push him into a fountain, into a public fountain when he said that. That's what I wanted to do with him.
Yeah, Pam's reaction was like, sure, yeah. Ugh. Gross. I hate that kind of ego. It's just so unattractive.
Yes, it is highly unattractive. It makes no sense. It's like, have you not learned? Do you not have social cues to understand how gross you sound right now? Ugh. Anyway, I'm annoyed by him, but he tries to explain. He mansplains to Pam about this sketch that he's drawn.
That's what he's doing. He's mansplaining like the whole date.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, not good.
Yeah, people tell me not to be edgy in my cartoons, but I am edgy. Yeah, and she throws some sarcasm at him, and he doesn't even get it because he's too full of himself to understand that anyone would like not take him seriously. And I love that, like that Pam, because that's something that Jim would have picked up on immediately. You know what I mean? Like if they were sort of teasing each other back and forth, the sarcasm would have been picked up immediately. But she throws some sarcasm at this guy to try and like calm down his stupid ego, and he doesn't even get it because he's so full of himself.
Yeah, terrible. There was one little thing that I want to mention about how Toby tried to ask out Pam failed. And it's one of those things that I feel like becomes a recurring thing with Toby. So I think this is a good time to mention it, that he did try and give it a shot to ask out Pam and just failed miserably because he is Toby. And yeah, that was the end of that.
Yeah, he shot his shot.
Yeah.
That did not work.
What is
out.
This? He shot his shot stuff.
That's a thing.
You shoot is that a phrase?
Yeah. You shoot your shot. That means like you take a chance. And
yeah, okay.
Yeah, it either hits or it misses.
All right. Okay. I can get behind that. I like at the end of this episode how a voiceover that Michael has about friendship.
Some people need dozens of friends to say, hey, look at me, I'm popular. But not me. I'm very picky. I need three, maybe two. When you meet that someone special, you'll just know. Because a real relationship, it can't be forced. It should just come about effortlessly.
And then we get like the nice little montage of it relates back to Jim and Pam and their friendship. And I thought it was just a nice little synopsis that Michael was providing. And through a confessional at the very, very end.
Yeah.
And then, of course, he throws in a Michaelism and it's funny, but he should take his own advice. You know, like he can be wise and he can actually internalize some things that happened to him and reflect on that. And I think that that's nice that we are seeing Michael learning a little bit. We see him unlearning very quickly in, you know, later on, but we do see him slowly understanding what's going on and what friendship actually should be between people, as opposed to what he strives for sometimes.
He can do it.
He can do it. We also get a nice little end cap to the episode with the black light, which I think about every time I enter a hotel room.
Yeah, I do too, actually. I think it was like a couple weeks ago, maybe it's about 3 weeks ago. I don't remember. But the last time I was in a hotel room, I made that joke. Like, oh man, I wish I had a black light with me.
No, you don't wish you had a black light. No one wishes it.
You do, but you don't. Like, no. I don't want to see it, but I do want to see it, but I don't want to see it.
Oh, and of course we end, the last word of this episode was urine. I just need to say that.
I hope it's urine. I hope those stains are urine and not blood or other.
Oh, no, no, stop,
other,
stop, stop.
I said blood or other fluids.
Stop. I'm going to give out our Dundee before you say any more. Just can't do it. Oh, this week's Dundee. This week's
is
Dundee.
Stop
is...
Micah from saying stop. Words.
Dundee! This week's Dundee, I'm going to call it the Spooky Spook Award. And it goes to Al Savell and Super Hiki on Twitter and for their Dwight style dot matrix Halloween decorations that they put up in their office. And I just got these minimal decorations would make any office fan scream with delight because they are wonderful. My favorite is the pixel, like, what is that called? It dot matrix, right? Yeah,
yeah,
the
dot matrix.
Dwight that they have. And what does it say? Oh my gosh. It was
Halloween decoration. It says underneath.
Oh, it's so good. It is your birthday. I absolutely love these.
My favorite is the definition, boo, exclamation, said suddenly to surprise someone. Example, ghost, boo. That's so good.
They're very good. They're very minimal and they're very The Office. So get on up here and accept your Dundee.
Bum, bum, ba-dum, bum, bum, ba-dum,
yay!
Bum, bum,
so you should go check those out on Twitter. They're very good. We will link to it in our Dundee post.
Be afraid. Halloween is a Wednesday.
Halloween is a Wednesday this year. It's a Wednesday Halloween.
Middle of the week nonsense. Okay, so Tiff has come up with this excellent idea that I'm so pumped about. And
it
I don't
is
know
excellent.
How, right, it is. It is. We just had to put it out there. I don't know how we hadn't thought about this before, but I'm glad that we are thinking about it now. We want to do a contest for Halloween. Spooky.
Ooh.
Send us your photos of you dressed up as a character from The Office, or actually I should just say office themed outfits, because it could be a clever, funny joke. Like maybe you're going to dress up as the bat that attacked Meredith's face that gave her rabies or.
That's a bit of a stretch. I don't think I wouldn't award a Dundee to that one.
I would laugh. I would laugh. Yeah, that's probably not going to get a Dundee, but I would laugh. Like, especially if it's like the bag is involved. Maybe you have like a paper mache Meredith, like. It's all about the details.
That's like, it's the reverse right there. Cause it actually being Meredith with the bat on her head would kind of be amazing.
Okay. That would be funny. Yeah. Do that instead.
Would be really good.
There's an idea. But if you take it, I can't guarantee you're going to win a Dundee. Regardless, we've got, a few weeks between now and our November 1st episode, because that's whenever we will be awarding the Dundee. Now we do record a little bit earlier. So get in your photos as soon as you can. You know, these can be from past Halloweens. It doesn't have to be just from this Halloween. But yeah, we're looking for Halloween office themed costumes, and the winner or winners, depending on how excellent these costumes end up being, will get a Dundee on our November 1st episode.
All right. So get on out there and get to snapping those pictures.
Get spooking.
Get spooking. And make sure you don't let the janitor vacuum up all of your fake cobwebs.
Of course, thank you so much for listening. And as Tiff mentioned, you can follow us on Twitter at @tall_beats or sign up to become a member of The Incomparable. You'll get some goodies. You'll get to hear some episodes early, straight off of the Skype feed. And of course, you'll get to join us in the conference room in the members only Slack. There is a link in the show notes to sign up to become a member. And I guess until next time, we have reached another episode. I hope that you all will take your swag bags as you leave through the front door. And we'll see you next time back at the office.
For the coup. Dun, dun, dun.
Dun, dun, dun.